Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Katie Britton. Everyone has a stack of recipe cards, whether they're neatly filed away or tucked in places only the chef can find. We know they're there. Some contain the family's most treasured cake and cookie recipes, while others are from friends and friends of friends. Either way, they're a part of our baking history. No one knows this more than Rebecca French. Coming from a family of home bakers, she's found the perfect ideas for preserving family recipes and gives us her favorites in Sweet Home.
Absolutely. They are tried and true. I mean, they truly are my favorite recipes. So they're, you know, they work because we've used them. Many friends have used them. And it's funny because a lot of people ask me what my favorite recipe is in the book, and it's really hard to say because so many are my favorite.
Well, there are some amazing recipes, but before we get to them, I'd like to talk to you about preserving these recipes, and you give us 10 great ways that we can do that, and I never thought of producing a video DVD of one of my family members cooking.
Absolutely, and it's a way to really see their technique, and it's a fun way to be in the kitchen with a relative, a friend. So, you know, while you, and there's so many, you do it with your phone today. You know, you can have it professionally done. I give, you know, places, online sources where you can have them made, but you can also just produce it at home and make sure that you're seeing how they do it, have them talk about it while they're doing it. You can add in different interviews with family members. It's a great gift that you can distribute to many people.
I mean, aside from the note cards, I think we all have a stack of index cards.
Yes, exactly.
Full of family recipes.
Many water stained, torn.
Absolutely. And the one thing is that you do mention is how when a family member dies and there were all those recipes or kitchen items, how it, you don't want to become Mr. Rabbit, the rabbit, but, you know, share them, do it in a way that everybody can have the same recipe or a piece of that family history.
Right. Because I do. I think people in a strange way can become kind of greedy, and maybe they think it's going to get lost or if they don't grab onto it. So I think, you know, there are ways of, if there's one crumb caca iron or one pizzelle iron, that make it an event. Everyone gets together at holidays and you make those together. So it's actually creating something that's bringing everyone together instead of separating families, you know. And one of my favorite ideas in the book is there's a company online, CustomSepia.com, and she can take, whether it be that recipe card, she can, it's almost like she's photocopying it onto a very pretty platter, or you can have it, you know, handwritten nicely, and it's having those platters made for family members with the recipe, and they can serve that item on the platter, and it's, you know, it's preserved in a way that can't get torn or lost. Well, it can get lost, but hopefully not.
Well, that, and you have one of the vintage tea towels that used to have the recipes. You can have your own made.
Right, exactly. You can have them printed on there as well.
It's such a great idea. When we get to the gadgets, I mean, that's the thing. You have your wish list of things that you would love to always have in a kitchen. And I mean, sometimes our kitchens just aren't big enough to hold them all. So how do you get around if recipes call for a KitchenAid and you don't have one, all you have is a hand beater? Can cooks or bakers just substitute a hand mixer for that or a whisk?
Absolutely, because that's how my grandmother did it. And, you know, a lot of them, so in some of them I'll say, you know, 150 strokes or, you know, so you just mix it until they are combined. I mean, the stand mixer really is such a beautiful thing because you can walk away and get other things done. But now there's really nothing except for, yeah, there is a crumb cracker recipe and a rosette recipe where those you need specific irons. But those are particular to my Scandinavian heritage, my Norwegian heritage. But no, otherwise, really everything in the book, you don't need a food processor. You can use a hand blender, two forks.
Now, you just mentioned the crumb cracker and a cloudberry. It's cloudberry crumb cracker cones. And what in the world is a cloudberry?
Oh, they're so delicious. And I have to say, they're really, I've never seen them in the U.S., and I've worked with a food stylist who had them imported once, and he said by the time they were for a shoot, by the time they got to the U.S., they were unusable. So they are a small, it looks like a red raspberry. It's a golden berry that grows kind of subarctic region, very in kind of shrub-like bushes, and they are so delicious and very crunchy. They don't taste like a raspberry, although they look like one. Crunchy, not too sweet, and you can get a cloudberry preserve. That's what you can find in the U.S., so that's what I used with that whipped cream.
And there's wonderful little dollops on these cones that you've made.
And you make the cone, it's a flat, and then you roll it on a wooden cone-shaped tool, or you can just use your fingers, and then you can fill it with the whipped cream and a little dollop of cloudberry preserves.
I don't think cooking and baking should be clean in a certain sense. You know, you need to have that flour or, you know.
Which I often do. I'll pick up my kids at school with a little frosting on my chin.
Now, you have the go-to hot fudge pudding cake. And oh my Lanta, just the description. How did this recipe come to your family?
Well, that was my mother's, you know, and I don't actually know where she found that originally, but she would make that, and it's a very funny story because there was a red light on our oven, and when the oven was in use, the light was on, so my father, you could see it from the kitchen table, and my father would sit at the table, and when the light was on, he'd always say, oh, Marianne, are we having hot fudge pudding cake for dessert? Because he hoped it was in the oven, but a lot of times she just had the oven, she had left it on, so that was his way of teasing her, but it is something that you can, it literally takes 5 minutes to whip up, deep, dark, you know, cocoa makes it really fudgy, and while it takes about 30 minutes to bake, and pop it in the oven right before dinner, and when dinner's done, you can serve it with vanilla ice cream, and it makes a kind of a crunchy crust on the top, and it's a fudgy sauce underneath, so it is so delicious over the ice cream. It's just the perfect combination.
Oh, that sounds so perfect for any time. And your family, I mean, they're big on desserts. That's the thing. It's so hard these days. I mean, my mother used to cook a homemade meal, and then there would be the dessert, and it was like that in your family, too.
Absolutely. There was always some kind of foil-covered treat on the counter. And I find it's funny, having written this book, how many people, well, we don't eat desserts, we're trying to avoid desserts. And, you know, we eat very healthfully, so I feel just a little bit, you know, you don't need to sit down and eat the whole cake. And that's one thing I really promote in the book is sharing and giving. There's a whole chapter, actually, called Giving. And our neighbors, who Robin Cheshy teaches cooking in the local elementary school, and it's very funny because she'll call me and say, oh, we have some cake for you. So they'll keep one sliver, and she'll give the rest to us. So, you know, that's how they all stay so slim over there. But it's just sharing the baked goods and really, you know, making them, having a little treat, giving them to others. You know, I think it shouldn't be forgotten altogether.
And one of the recipes in your giving section is the rhubarb crumble bars. And rhubarb is plentiful right now.
It is, and it's really, it gets a great crust on the top. A friend of mine actually just made them, and I got to go over there and taste hers that she'd made, and they're delicious. It's a great way to serve the rhubarb, and it gets kind of like a nice juicy underneath the crunchy top. It's really good.
And so in that, we have the lemon zest. How does the lemon help balance out the rhubarb taste and the tartness of the rhubarb when you're adding that citrusy taste to it?
Yeah, and there is. I mean, because when you use rhubarb, I tried to cut down on the sugar so it wouldn't get so sweet. I do like the tartness of rhubarb, and I think the lemon just enhances that. Sometimes I feel that the sugar almost overpowers rhubarb, and in this recipe it definitely doesn't.
And the almonds are a nice extra crunch there to kind of juxtapose against the rhubarb once it gets cooked down.
Absolutely.
And then there's the, oh gosh, the crunchy lime mint cookies.
Oh, those are one of my favorite. And that's in the creating chapter, which is a chapter because I'm really trying to promote preserving family history, obviously, through this book. And, you know, there are people who say, we don't have traditions. I don't have any favorite recipes from our family. We're not a recipe-rich family. So with the creating chapter, I'm hoping to inspire people to start their history now, you know, with recipes like this crunchy lime cookie, which is a cookie that my daughter and I really developed. We both love lime and shortbread, and it was a good combination, and it's got the lime glaze on the top. It almost looks like cilantro. So it's funny because it looks almost like a savory cookie, but it's so sweet and crunchy and delicious.
So when you're making up recipes, I think a lot of people are scared to bake because they feel that if it's not measured out properly, the whole recipe will just go kaput. You know what I mean?
Right. Because it's very different from cooking. Yeah. And it can happen. I mean, you do need to follow recipes. You can't just put this and that in. But I think the more you bake, the more you realize, oh, I can add a handful of chocolate chips or nuts or what you can replace. So it's really just like anything. It's practice.
And before we go, I have to talk to you about the pistachio lover's pound cake. I mean, just the picture of it. You have a loaf pound cake and then the glaze drizzling down the sides with the chopped pistachios on top.
It's such a good way to get that pistachio flavor. And we get a client of my husband's just gives him pounds of pistachios at Christmas. And so we're always looking for ways to use them. And that is just, and it's a cake that gets better, you know, as it ages almost. Mm. So 2 days, 3 days, although it doesn't usually last that long. And it's a good gift to give. You know, at the holidays, it's nice to package it with some pistachios and the recipe so that the person to whom you're giving it can then make it again. Well, they may be asking you for the recipe otherwise.
Well, that's one of the things, is being able to package our baked goods to give them to people and making it homey from your kitchen to that person's.
Right. You know, I give several ways on packaging things. And, you know, I think giving the recipe, how many times, you know, have you gotten something? I'll taste something or somebody will give me something. Ooh, can I get that recipe? And I'm chasing them down. So just at the outset to give that, and then they'll have that. And every time they, you know, make that, they'll think of you. They'll remember the time you had spent together with, you know, that particular baked item. So I think it's a really nice, it's part of you. You know, you're giving your time and energy with that gift.
Well, it is the Sweet Home Cookbook. Rebecca, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was really nice talking with you.
Again, Rebecca French is the author and baker of Sweet Home, over 100 heritage desserts and ideas for preserving family recipes. It is published by Kyle Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.